The goal is always Omaha. We will not hide from that.
I'm Josh Criswell, and you just heard from Sam Houston State baseball coach Jay Sirianni. This is the Item Insider Podcast. Today on the podcast, Jay Sirianni joins us to talk about what it means to him to take over the Bearcat baseball program, what his dad taught him through a lifetime of coaching, and what it is that he loves about the city of Huntsville. Also coming up on the show, Jason Barfield, Sam Houston State's Associate AD for Media Relations, joins the show to talk a little bit about his Bearcat memories, as well as something he's a big part of, Southland Eats, a movement that covers all of the food happenings around the Southland Conference. Listen to more episodes and download and subscribe at itemonline.com/pods. But first, our interview with Sam Houston State baseball coach Jay Sirianni. Joined right now by Jay Sirianni, the 10th head baseball coach of your Sam Houston State Bearcats. Coach, been with Sam Houston State for 5 years now, but I imagine this week has a little bit of a different feel to it.
Oh, absolutely. It's a great honor to be here and to kind of change seats, so to speak. But yeah, it's been a little hectic and fun and all exciting.
Right. You know, what has this process kind of been like for you over the past few weeks? We touched on it a little bit, but I imagine it's just been a whirlwind for you ever since all this started happening.
No, it all started when Coach Robe passed away, and it was a tough time for everybody here in the office. And you know, it kind of showed up, and then it starts to creep in your mind, and Matt was going through what he was going through, and you know, it's just the uncertainty of it all. And then when it all kind of started going down, the stress has changed a little bit, but it amazing experience so far.
Right. And what were kind of the emotions like for you, this being your first head coaching job, you know, whenever you got the call from Bobby that sort of confirmed that you'd be the next head coach of the Bearcats?
First thing I did was I kind of just sat in my office for about an hour and didn't say anything to anybody and closed the door and said some prayers and thanks and just kind of got my breath back to me. But it was tense there for a while, but Coach Williams was great. He was always communicating, and that I'll always appreciate that. So.
Right, and you know, Coach Williams introduced you at the podium as head coach earlier this week. You know, for you, one of the things you mentioned was how your dad was a coach for many, many years while you were growing up. How did your time kind of growing up around the baseball diamond shape you into the coach that you are today?
Oh, I mean, just the experiences of, you know, watching how it's been goofed up, screwed up, you know, the relationships that my dad was able to form with his players. You know, he was at a Division III school in Iowa for over 25 years, and it's a little different scenario, Division I versus Division III, but it's still developing players and developing kids and into men. And some of my dad's best friends are his former players now that he's retired, and most of those guys are high school coaches and back in Iowa. And so you kind of just learn how to get through and deal with situations. But the best part was I grew up on a field. I was a bat boy. I did it all. So I think that's probably where I learned how to throw BP too.
Right. And, you know, did you always know that you wanted to go into coaching at some point after your playing career?
That's a funny one. You know, a lot of people will ask me kind of who my three influences are in my life. And one's my dad. One's my uncle, who retired as a lieutenant colonel from the Marine Corps. And then Coach Childress, the head coach over at Texas A&M. So when I got released from the Indians organization, I called all three of them. I still had to go back to Nebraska to graduate. And Coach Childress told me I was coaching. My dad told me I was coaching. And my uncle said to go to officer school. And the military scared me. So that was kind of how I ended up doing it.
Nice. And, you know, you talk about some of your influences, your dad, Coach Childress, and then obviously Coach Deggs. What are some of maybe the individual things that you took away from each of those guys?
Well, just the first thing is all three of them is just the passion for the game and the teacher in all of them. How they do things differently is, you know, you'll take a nugget from this one, a nugget from the next. But just the way that they communicate with their players, the way their players care for them and vice versa. So those are all pieces to it that you hope to carry on.
Right. You know, you've been associate head coach here at Sam Houston State under Coach Deggs. And one of the things you mentioned in your press conference that kind of stood out is how, more than anything, he challenged you to think like a head coach. How much do you think that prepares you to kind of maybe reduce the learning curve that might be there for a normal first-year head coach?
Oh, I think it's quite a bit. You know, Matt let me deal with the pitching, and I just kind of did my own thing. Offensively, we'd always talk about the lineup and the reasons why I thought this way and that way. And, you know, so that stuff was the game management. It will probably be the, you know, like I said in the press conference, ultimately I'm going to have to make that decision. Mm-hmm. Where that was Matt's, you know, five years. But doing the office stuff and all that kind of thing, he's prepared me to do that to where this week my pile's not, you know, a foot tall, it's only 6 inches tall.
So. Right. You know, a lot of guys that left this year, big senior class that exited, but also have a lot of guys coming back. One of the guys you mentioned by name in your press conference, Colton Cowser. For you as the leader of the program, how exciting is it to see a guy like him go out and, you know, not just represent Sam Houston State, but go on and shine for Team USA, taking home MVP awards at those international series?
Oh, it's incredible. It's fun to watch that kid grow up just in the 1 year he's already been here. His smile, his personality, all of that is infectious with the guys. And he's just one that you like to be around as a kid, not necessarily always baseball. I mean, and that's the important part. But, you know, the whole group's coming back. Jack Rogers, he's going to be a big piece to this. Gavin Johnson as well. You know, those are three pretty good left-handed hitters to know that are going to be in the lineup a lot. And then our recruiting class, Coach Harv and myself did a lot of it. And we're excited about all those guys coming in too. So there's going to be we're going to have to, you know, maybe go the old junior high football route and put some names on hats and stuff, but we'll be good. We'll be fine.
Right. And, you know, you talked, you know, losing some guys, but with that group, I kind of want to take you back. Part of one of the most historic moments in Sam Houston State history a few years ago, winning that regional in Lubbock to reach the Super Regionals for first time. I talked to Jason, kind of get his thoughts as a broadcaster, but for you, you know, sitting in the dugout, what was that moment like to experience that?
It was wild. I mean, you just gave me chill bumps, you know, because the first thing I did was just sat back. Coaches, obviously, we were all hugging and all that, but I just sat there and watched our kids and how excited they were, the work that they had put in, the investment that they'd had in each other, and it was just kind of that, you know, the icing on the cake, so to speak, and to watch those kids celebrate that, and it was unbelievable. Never forget it.
Right. You know, one of the things you mentioned in your press conference was trying to take that next step and how the goal is always Omaha. As a program, as y'all move forward, what would you say is maybe the greatest challenge or maybe thing that y'all need to do to be able to take that step and make even more school history?
Well, the toughest part is playing the RPI game as a mid-major school. You know, we have to play a difficult non-conference schedule. It's just part of it. And the best part, our guys are battle tested when they do get into a conference tournament setting or a regional setting, and they understand the pressures that we're under every day. When you're in one of those Power Five conferences, the midweeks aren't as big a deal to them. Not that they don't want to win it, but their RPIs in conference. And then the other side for us is our conference it's an older league. A lot of kids grow up in the league for 3-4 years. There's a lot of experience. And so it's 56 games for us that we really don't get to take a deep breath. And when that happens, it comes down to our development. It comes down to us becoming a tighter unit as a group and not giving in to all the craziness that goes on playing the RPI game, if that makes sense.
Right. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about Jay Sirianni, the coach, but before we go, kind of want to give the audience a little peek. What's Jay Sirianni, the person, like when he's not on the road recruiting, scouting, in the dugout? What's Jay Sirianni like away from the baseball field?
Well, the first thing is I'm a husband that does everything right with my wife and just tries to be a good dad. I try to be the fun dad. My wife, she's kind of the bad cop, so to speak. As busy as we are and as often as I'm gone, when I get home, I'm kind of the fun parent. But my wife's the rock of the whole thing, and she puts up with me and lets me chase my dream. Love being the outdoors. If I can go hunting and fishing, that's where I'll be as much as I can. You know, and then my dog, every morning we go on a run, and that's me in a nutshell.
Right. So, and, you know, don't want to give away too many secrets, but do you have a favorite hunting and fishing spot in Texas?
There's a few. I'm more of a waterfowl hunter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're around here quite a bit. And when we first moved here, my daughter went to a private school here in town, and one of her best friends, her dad's a big hunting guide here, and we've kind of hit it off, good buddies, and so I'm not going to tip his hand either, but we have a good time. And that's one of the best parts about Huntsville. It's open arms, they're welcoming, and the day we got here, my family's just kind of felt at home, so we really enjoy it.
Hey, Coach, you know, you kind of touched on it right there, just the last question I got for you. Moved to Huntsville a few years ago. How's kind of your perception and just sort of how much your connection to this place has grown over these last few years?
Well, the scariest part is how big it's getting and how fast it's growing. I mean, you drive around town, there's a new building being built every day. And when we got here, we were all waiting for the academy to open, so we had an outdoor store. But, you know, the people here are amazing. They open their arms and they've gotten to know us. They've gotten to know my kids. You know, they have friends, and my wife's had all that. And so that's not always the case where you go, and that's always been special to us.
You just heard from Sam Houston State head baseball coach Jay Sirianni. Coming up next, our conversation with Associate AD Jason Barfield. Welcome to the show right now, Jason Barfield of Sam Houston State Athletics. Jason is the Associate AD for Media Relations for the Bearcats, oversees all video and sports information operations, as well as being a big part of something that we're going to talk a lot about today, and that is Southland Eats. So let's get into it right away. Jason, why don't you tell the audience a little bit, what is Southland Eats?
First off, appreciate you having me here. It's good to be back in the old building. It's been a while since I've been over here. But now Southland Eats is a Twitter account we started a little over a year ago. Basically, it's just where are the best places to eat when traveling around the Southland Conference. And we don't even really limit it to Southland Conference. If you're associated with the league and I'm following you on Twitter and you post something about food, I don't care if you're in Chicago or Seattle or wherever, we're going to retweet it. But, you know, the funny thing about it is it all started during a rain delay at a Southland baseball tournament a year ago. And we were all sitting around talking that, you know, we need to do something for some of the best places to eat. And so while we were sitting there during the rain delay, we started Southland Eats on Twitter. And, you know, within 2 days, it was blowing up already. People were posting food and tagging Southland Eats. And, you know, it started with the best places to eat in Sugar Land, and it's just grown from there.
Right, and my introduction to Southland Eats came very shortly after that. I believe it was on the road trip to Thibodaux for the Nichols game last football season. Stopped at Darrell's in Lake Charles, grabbed a po' boy, and that was my introduction, and that's also going to be our jumping off point for the discussion we're going to have to start things off today. Going to be talking a lot of food right now and kind of our favorite spots around the Southland Conference. Go-to places to grab a beer, grab some food, and just kind of relax before we get to work while we're out on the road. Whenever it comes to a favorite spot in the Southland Conference for me, there's a lot of different places to choose from. During our teaser episode a few weeks ago at Southland Conference Media Day, I gave a different answer. I gave Mama's in Natchitoches, which is a phenomenal spot. But after a little bit more time thinking about it, I really think I gotta go with Floyd's in Beaumont.
Floyd's is a good eat, and I hadn't been to Floyd's until, I guess, football season this past year was the first time I had gone to Floyd's. Typically, there's just not a lot of really good places to eat in Beaumont. So a lot of times with that trip, that was a drive over, play your game, and then drive home. It's such a short trip. But certainly Floyd's is a place that I've been to now a couple of times. And every time I go, I get something different. And it's strong. It's a strong number one. And certainly as we sit down and start looking at how you want to break things up, you know, depending on how you shuffle the brackets and stuff like that, Floyd's is a one seed contender for sure.
Right. And for me, you know, I'm a guy who graduated from LSU. I love my Cajun food. And Floyd's is something that, in my opinion, you know, even some of your spots in Louisiana, you know, it's hard to beat that Southeast Texas staple in Floyd's. Now for you, Jason, what is your favorite go-to spot in the Southland Conference?
You know, we had this discussion, in fact, down at Media Day. Several of us were sitting around the table one night, and we started talking. Darrell's is really good. I like Darrell's sandwiches in Lake Charles. Mama's in Natchitoches is really good. I'm a big fan of Lazione's in Natchitoches. A lot of people call it a tourist place and stuff like that. And, you know, you got the fried green tomatoes signage up there and stuff like that. But, man, a good meat pie and red beans and rice at Lazione's is really good. One of the underrated places that doesn't get talked about a lot because it's not in a Southland city per se, but when you look at just, you know, driving places, you got so much barbecue in the state of Texas. And, you know, heading over to San Antonio and you go to Luling and you go to City Market, you know, it's not a Southland city, but you go through there on the way to Incarnate Word and stuff like that. That is some good barbecue. And that's the one thing about, you know, driving to through Texas is it doesn't necessarily have to be in a city that has the school, but there's some good places to eat on the road in the state of Texas.
Right. And you talk a little bit about those places that aren't necessarily in a Southland town, might not be on the direct route there, but it's a place that we encounter a lot. And something that comes to mind immediately, something that me and you both had several times this year traveling on the road to cover baseball and softball games, is Southside Market outside of Austin. I mean, Jason, is there a better place on the road to grab barbecue that you've been to recently than Southside Market?
Just because of the nature of my travel this year, we had so many teams in the postseason. I was heading to and from Austin a lot this spring. I probably ate Southside Market 6 times this spring, and it is so good. I mean, absolutely, it is one of the best barbecue places. I mean, you got to really know what to order there. Their sausage is phenomenal. They
is
do
the Slammers.
That is their, you know, jalapeno cheddar wrapped pan sausage wrapped in bacon. Those things are phenomenal. I've got 3 of them in my freezer right now that I'm waiting to break out and, you know, throw on the smoker here in a little bit. But yeah, those are so good. I tell you what, I was telling this story the other day. I said the absolute best slammer I ever had was the one that you brought to the press box in Austin during the softball tournament when I saw you were at Southside, and I tweeted back at you to bring a slammer, and you came through clutch, brought a couple of slammers to the press box. That was money.
Oh, yeah, and I remember that day perfectly clear. I believe it was around 9 a.m. I rolled into Southside Market on my way out to cover softball at the Austin Regional after they upset the Longhorns. Rolling there, having baby back ribs for breakfast at 9 a.m., about to head out of the parking lot. Right then, I look down at my phone. I have a notification from Jason Barfield asking me if I'm bringing some slammers. And I was like, you know what? That's a sign. I got to run back in and grab us some.
Well, and you know, you talk about kind of, you know, whether it's on the way and stuff like that. Tell you what, a good restaurant can really determine the route that you take to get where you're going. You know, Mary's Cafe on the way to Abilene is another one that it's in Strawn, Texas. It may not necessarily be on the way. There's other ways you can get to Abilene, but we drive through Strawn to go to Mary's Cafe for the chicken fried steak. It is about as big of a chicken fried steak as you can possibly imagine, and it's like $19, and it is incredible.
Right, and we talk a lot about these Texas spots. Going to jump into some Louisiana schools and their food in a little bit, but you know, we talk about the Southland, and you have places like Houston and New Orleans. It's almost hard to throw them in there because there's so many options. But man, you know, we go down to those cities. We were down there for Southland Media Day, and there's no shortage of good food. You know, for me, I went to Gino's, and for you, I believe I saw a picture from Kenny and Ziggy's.
Did Kenny and Ziggy's. One of the things that, you know, I like to do when I do Houston stuff is I kind of do like to go a little out of the way. One of my favorite spots in Houston is Star Pizza. That's a good, strong pizza. I don't know if it makes the list of the best pizza places in Houston, but I certainly think it's up there. It's got a really good deep dish that I like to get, but it's one of those that you can walk up, you can sit down almost immediately and get a good pizza.
If you had to pick one, what's your go-to spot in Texas in the Southland Conference?
My favorite Texas Southland spot. You know, I mean, Floyd's is a good strong one in Beaumont. If you're talking about, you know, in city, there's a lot of really good places to eat down in Corpus. I tried to hit a couple of new spots this year in Corpus. There's a place down on the water though called Snoopy's. And it is a fried fish, fried catfish, hush puppy type place, cash only. It's down on the water. It is so good. It's a must stop. It's a little bit out of the way. They also have an ice cream place right next door called Scoopies. So you have Snoopy's and then you go over to Scoopies for ice cream. So, you know, that's a really good spot in Corpus.
And you talk about off the beaten path. One place that immediately comes to mind is Ray's Drive-In in Lufkin, place me and you stopped on our way out to the regular season doubleheader finale for basketball at Stephen F. Austin. Ray's, I mean, you talk about a place you walk in and it takes you right back to the 1950s. It's your classic burger joint. Got some regular burgers, got some crazy ones, got some Texas toothpicks, always a good choice. Also have some phenomenal baked potatoes, as well as some adult slushies if that's what you're in the mood for. And of course, one thing I saw you grab was the classic milkshake.
That's, to me, if you're going to talk about a good hamburger kind of drive-in type place, a lot of people can do a good burger on a flat top and stuff like that. They'll throw on their bacon. If you can make a good milkshake to go along with it, that's a good little bonus to add, and that kind of starts separating you from the other burger places if you can put a good milkshake at the end.
Yeah, and of course, right next door, another state that features some phenomenal food, Louisiana. And with Louisiana and our schools there in the Southland kind of split up a little bit, have Northwestern State, you know, kind of up on the northern part of the state up that way in Natchitoches, and then on the south end you got Thibodeau and you got Hammond, where Nichols and southeastern Louisiana are respectively. For me, as a guy that went to school at LSU, I gotta lean toward the southern Louisiana cuisine. Love me some meat pies, love me some mamas, but for me, probably my favorite food trip in the Southland Conference that I've made so far was the football trip down to Thibodeau for the Nichols game last year.
The one thing I do like about, you know, when you look at the southern part of the state is when you're traveling down I-10, you've got spots in Lake Charles, Lafayette, Baton Rouge, you know, on your way to Hammond, on your way to Baton Rouge, I mean, on your way to Thibodeau. So it's not just like, you know, when you're going to Northwestern State, you're not stopping in Manny to eat, you know, so you're going to Natchitoches. The thing about any of these other, we can drive to Hammond and stop in Lake Charles and eat, stop in Lafayette and eat. And there's so many good places in Lafayette to eat. And, you know, same type of thing. If you want pizza, there's Dino's. And if you want, you know, there's markets and you can get Boudin and, you know, just a lot of really good places along the way. So I think in terms of traveling and eating, I like that southern Louisiana better just because, you know, there's so many different spots along the way. I'm a big Mike Anderson's fan.
For me, that trip down to Thibodeau, like I said, one of the best trips that I think I've been on personally food-wise in the Southland Conference. You know, one of the things that stuck out to me is we go down there and in addition to stopping, you know, at Daryl's for the first time, grab my surf and turf po' boy that's now a staple for me every time I'm passing through that town. But we get down there and it's, you know, you get down there on game day. It's your South Louisiana tailgate. I see you bringing in jambalaya and boudin up into the press box.
Walk up to a tailgate in Nichols and they call you over and they've got this just gigantic pot of jambalaya going and they spoon the thing out. I swear it was a boat oar that they're using to spoon this jambalaya out onto a plate. Phenomenal.
Talked a lot of food today. Going to get into some sports here shortly. Going to let you talk a little bit about your experience being around this team really since the mid-90s. But first things first, for our Southland Conference colleagues coming to Huntsville, give them a go-to spot.
You know, a couple of the places that I do like to go, I like Walls Barbecue. And I like Walls for some of the off-the-wall kind of stuff. You know, yeah. I like the brisket fries, the brisket nachos, some of the, you know, you can really do some good smoked wings there. And, you know, they do some kind of different things. So Walls is one of the ones. Farmhouse, obviously, is an easy go-to. Right. And, you know, it's tough for us because we're here every day. We eat here every day. But, you know, Farmhouse is one of the ones that I hear a lot of people talking about when they do come into Huntsville, that's kind of a must-eat for them. Is hitting up that. Obviously, McKenzie's is really good barbecue as well, a good solid spot. So, you know, those are kind of my three recommendations. If you want to go barbecue, you got McKenzie and some Walls. Benny J's is really good. You know, you got to time that right, though. But Farmhouse is just a good all-around good spot to eat.
It's hard to beat that chicken fried steak at Farmhouse.
It's definitely a top 10 chicken fried steak.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you mentioned Benny J's too, because Benny J's is going to be my pick for the Southland Conference media members and athletics administration people coming to Huntsville. I tell them to go to Benny J's if you can get there. It's a little bit tricky because you got to get there before 3, and also once they run out of their food, they're out.
You're done.
But to me, that's the staple of a tremendous Texas barbecue joint, is once they're out of their good barbecue, they're out of it for the day. An honorable mention, though, Cafe Texan. Going to tell a little bit of a story. Probably one of the coolest moments that I've had covering games in the Southland Conference this season. For the Abilene Christian basketball game this past year, not only was it really a pivotal game in the season where Sam Houston State, you know, didn't officially clinch, but basically all but clinched the Southland Conference regular season title. Go down there, win a thriller on the road in double OT. Marcus Harris with a tremendous shot down the stretch to lift the Bearcats to victory. But on a personal note, you know, I'm sitting sideline. I walk up to my seat at half court for the men's game that night. And sitting right next to me, you know, I'm a guy, I grew up in the Houston area. I was a huge fan of Texas A&M basketball and those teams with AC Law that shocked Texas with head coach Billy Gillespie at the helm. And sure enough, I pull up my seat at half court. Sitting right next to me is Billy Gillespie himself, former Texas A&M Kentucky coach. I believe he's at Ranger College now. But you know what the first thing he says to me whenever he sits down? He looks my way and says, "They still serving up good food at Cafe Texan?" You know, enough about the food in the conference. I want to talk to you a little bit about your journey covering this team. You know, you've, whether it's been with the Bearcat Athletics Department, at one point even held my job as sports editor of the Huntsville Item. What's it been like, you know, covering this team over that span?
Well, my parents both went to Sam Houston as well. So, you know, I had it in my family. It's funny because Sam Houston, going through school, Sam Houston wasn't a school that I had kind of pegged as a place that I wanted to go. You know, I was Texas or Penn State, you know, something like that. But, you know, as I got closer to the end of high school and, you know, kind of was a little more dialed in on what I wanted to do in terms of my professional track, I wanted to go into broadcasting and looked at the opportunities that I had at Sam Houston. I was like, yeah, let's, you know, really good broadcasting program. So I started school here in 95. And I walked into Paul Riding's office, the sports information director, and told him I was looking for a job. And, you know, I had been over at the computer services department applying for a job. And the woman over there was like, "You need to go talk to Paul Riding's." And so, you know, when I walked in there and I told him that computer services had recommended me, he's like, "Well, we don't do a whole lot with computers." And I was like, "Well, I'm, you know, I play baseball." And he's like, "Well, you know how to keep stats?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Can you keep a book?" I'm like, who can't, you know? And he hired me right there on the spot. You know, little did I know that, you know, here I would be 24 years later working in the same building and, you know, stuff like that. So that's kind of how I got into it. But I worked in the sports information office all through school. While I was in school, I worked for the Houstonian newspaper. I did an internship here with the Huntsville Item. I worked for KMVL radio station in Madisonville. I did 90.5 radio. I was the sports anchor and sports director of the Channel 7 TV station. So I kind of had my hand in all of that. And then right at the end, I even ran a Sam Houston State page for Rivals.com. So, you know, I kind of covered just about every facet of media that you could cover in from 1995 to 1999, 2000. And so that's kind of how I got involved in all of this.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned your time running the site for Rivals, because one of the things I've been really interested to talk to you about is someone that works in media. What's it been like to watch how much the landscape for media and sports media in particular change over your time in sports media?
You know, it's funny, and kind of going back to when you first started getting things online, you'll still see a little bit of this, but Sam Houston, their official logo, they were using the Clemson paw print for a long time. That was on stationery, letterhead, and stuff like that, and it was just the Clemson paw print. I have a shirt that still has Sam Houston with the Clemson paw print on it. As soon as Sam Houston State Athletics went online for the first time and they put that Clemson paw print on it, Clemson was like, "Yeah, no, that's not happening." So the just going online and really expanding that brand was what forced the university and the athletic department to come up with the first really official mark having the SH and the paw print. That came because we went online and really didn't have a registered trademark to associate to the program. So that's where that first started. So just kind of seeing how everything has progressed, it's pretty incredible. You know, even when I was doing the website for Rivals.com, at that time, that was one of the first places where you could get real-time Sam Houston info, because even GoBearcats.com wasn't around yet. The athletics website was still being run on shsu.edu, and it was not set up to be able to post stories on the road. You had to be in the office sitting at a desktop computer that was tied to the university network. So my rivals.com page was the first one where I could post from the road and put game stories up night of. So that was the first place where fans could really kind of start getting some real time in the moment content. And so just seeing how that's all progressed, and it's incredible.
Right, and one of the many hats that you wear in your job is being the voice of Bearcat baseball. And, you know, with Jay Sirianni being introduced as the program's 10th head coach earlier this week, just got to ask you, what's been your favorite broadcasting memory with the Bearcats?
I'm actually going to give you a couple.
Absolutely.
Obviously, the Super Regional, you know, advancing to the Super Regional, playing Florida State, that clinching game against Texas Tech in the Lubbock Regional. For a couple of reasons. Obviously, it's just a moment that I've dreamed about, is, you know, being able to win a regional, because the Bearcats have been so close. I mean, going back to my freshman year at SAM in 1996, we went over to the Austin Regional that year and beat Miami in the first round, and that was a loaded Miami team. That Pat Burrell was a freshman on that team. One of the Coras, I think it was Joey Cora, was playing shortstop. So that was a loaded Miami team. We go over and upset them. So, you know, baseball has always been that sport that you can win a national championship. You know, there's just not a lot at our level where we can go out and win a Division I championship. So winning that regional was big. I was on the broadcast for that. And in fact, the morning of that broadcast, I was doing the games with Cooter Robertson. And Cooter had not been feeling great all week, and morning of, he lost his voice. And so I get to the press box and I was like, are you going to be able to go here? And he was like, you know, yeah, I'll be able to make it. Just once I get the game started, I'll be fine. He gets 15 seconds into his open and the voice just gone. And he goes to break, turns and looks at me and goes, I can't go. So I called all 9 innings of that game, and it was one of those, it just felt right that, you know, for everything that I've kind of gone through with the baseball program and, you know, kind of started broadcasting, it was the first game I ever broadcast for the student radio station was baseball. So it just felt right to be able to call all 9 innings and call that final out with Mikolajczyk getting the strikeout. And you know, that's the one that really sticks out to me.
What was that like for you? I mean, you know, I wasn't here yet. You were there on the site. What was that like for you as someone who's been around this team for so long, been around the program forever? What was that like for you just sitting there watching Miko throw his glove up in the air and watch the team celebrate the first NCAA Super Regional trip in school history?
I cried that day. I did. You know, when it was all said and done, I remember walking out of the press box and we were getting ready to go down to the interviews. And I was walking with my wife and the stadium was empty, and I just kind of stopped and just looked over the field and saw our players down there hugging parents and stuff like that. And, you know, I cried a little bit, and it was such an emotional thing just with that team. I mean, they had come out of the loser's bracket and that, and you had to stave off elimination against Arizona and then against Texas Tech and then to beat Texas Tech and everything, you know, just looking back at how close they'd been in the past with the TCU regional. Obviously, I was on the air for the entire 22 inning game against TCU. I called that whole game, and knowing how close that team was and the potential of having a super regional against Pepperdine in Huntsville that year if you win the Fort Worth regional, and just knowing how close they had been to actually get there and do that, that was really special.
You obviously been around a ton of baseball during your time here, but I know that you also have memories across the board, all different sports that I've, you know, heard you tell stories personally, whether we're traveling on the road or whatever it may be. You know, for you, I know you had an award-winning article on one of the football games during your time at the Item. What are some of those other experiences and memories that kind of stand out to you from your Bearcat career?
Yeah, football, you know, it's funny because I do get asked, what's your favorite Bearcat memory? And it's hard for me to break it down to one memory, so I kind of do it by sport. For football, you know, obviously 2 national championship games, winning semifinals at home against Montana, the crowd, you know, storming the field in 2011, 2012, going on the road to Eastern Washington, winning there to get back to the national championship. But the one for me that really still kind of sticks out is 2004 Eastern Washington game in Cheney, Washington. It's probably 25 degrees. And I really think they had the attitude of, here's a team from Texas coming up into the cold. There's no way they're going to win. You know, just from that factor alone. And for a while, it didn't look like it. I mean, we're down 34-14 to start the fourth quarter. And we put together just an unbelievable comeback. And, you know, a lot of people look at the final drive to win it. But, you know, with like a minute left, maybe less than a minute left, Eastern Washington's lining up for like a chip shot field goal to go up by 9. And we block the field goal and then convert a couple of fourth downs and march down and score on the last play to win it 35-34. That earned us a trip to Montana the next week. And, you know, I really think, even though it took 7 years to get back to the playoffs, I think that 2001-2004 playoff runs that the Bearcats had kind of helped lay the groundwork for what ultimately became what we've got going right now.
You talk about those runs in the early 2000s. I got to ask you, what was it like to watch Josh McCown play quarterback for the Cats?
He was special. I mean, right off the bat, you could tell he was special. I mean, first game, we go up to Louisiana Monroe and we're playing in a driving rainstorm and, you know, neither team can really move the ball. And he drops back to pass, tucks the ball, and runs it 60-something yards for a touchdown, probably broke 3 tackles. And he just didn't look like the type of player we were used to seeing on the field. And we had had some success already with transfer quarterbacks. We had had Chris Halupka the year before, who had come in from Oklahoma State, Southland Newcomer of the Year, Player of the Year, Offensive Player, you know, all of that good stuff. So we had kind of started transitioning our offense a little bit, but he was far and away better than anything that that we had ever had on the field. And really at our level, you know, I remember when, even when we went to Montana and we lost to Montana, a lot of the Montana fans were saying that he's one of the best quarterbacks that they had seen come in there. So you could tell he was special. I don't think anybody saw an 18-year NFL career out of that, but I think that was just a testament to the type of person he is and the type of player he is.
All right, Jason, well, I really appreciate you joining us today. But, you know, one question I have for you before you go, one of the many hats you wear in your job is running the Bearcat Sports Network. So I got to ask you, what are some of the big things coming for the fans this year?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things we're always trying to do is look for new things. And certainly, you know, you look in the realm of what can we do with podcasting. And we started the Chasing the Cup podcast last year. And, you know, what can we do with just pre-produced videos and interviews and highlights? And how can you take what you've been doing and present it a little bit differently and engage the fans a little bit more? So, you know, we've got some things I don't want to necessarily commit to right now, but some things that we're looking at doing that I think are going to be exciting. Obviously, a big focus of ours is our ESPN productions. And this past year, we produced 33 games for ESPN3 and ESPN+. We're going to shoot for about 40 this year. So always looking to kind of push the envelope on what we can do with our ESPN productions and then how we can take the resources that we have in ESPN and turn that into other content as well. So I think that's one of the things that I'm really excited with. We're also opening up a brand new studio. We just finished up a brand new 500-square-foot studio in what's now the Wood Forest Building, right on the edge of campus next to CVS. So going to be exciting to get in there, a couple of control rooms and some opportunities that we're going to have with that new building to really enhance what we've been doing.
Well, that does it for today's show. Thank you to everyone that tuned in. And don't forget, go to itemonline.com/pods to download, listen, and subscribe. We're available on a lot of platforms out there, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spreaker, Spotify, you name it. Got a lot of great content coming up, as well as some good interviews already on demand. Thanks for listening.